case, please.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice Moon. Good morning, Associate Justices, and good morning, Judge Alm. As the clerk noted, I'm Dane Miller, and with me is Wilma Sir, and we represent the petitioners, Save Diamond Head Surf, Save Kapi'olani, the Kapi'olani Park Preservation Society. Both of those are community organizations, and two individuals. As a preliminary matter, I want to thank the court for giving us the opportunity to be heard further on this matter because we think that it is, in fact, very important. I intend to confine my remarks to two discrete areas. Both of those areas are informed by a case that came down from this court after we, the petitioners, did our briefing in the Intermediate Court of Appeals. I just wanted to let the court know that I would be focusing many of my comments on aspects of that case. It is Colony Surf Limited v. Director of Department of Planning and Permitting, 116 Hawaii 510, 2007 case. Even though my remarks may be confined, I'll be happy to answer any questions that the panel members might have with respect to any aspect of the case to the extent that I can. So, may it please the court. The first area that I want to talk about is Land Use Ordinance 21-4.110C, subsection 4. And that's the portion of the Land Use Ordinance that allows a change from one nonconforming use to another nonconforming use. The facts in this case with respect to that portion of the Land Use Ordinance are fairly straightforward. The New Otani Hotel was built in 1950. It was expanded in 1962. And during that period of time, the property was allowed to be used as a hotel. During a portion of that period of time, it would also have been possible for there to have been an accessory use for a surf school. In 1969, the zoning changed. And as far as the record shows, there was no surf school use prior to the 1969 change in the zoning. 33 years later, after the area had been downzoned to basically apartment use, the Hans Hiedemann organization and the New Otani Hotel commenced their surf school operation on that parcel. It ran for about 2 years, 2.5 years, and there was a fair amount of community opposition. The record reflects a 700-person petition and a large number of complaints that were made. Among the things that were done is some of the petitioners herein asked the Department of Planning to review the zoning on that parcel with respect to this C4 portion of the land use ordinance. The Department of Planning did do a review, and it came out on June 30th, 2004, with a determination. And in that determination, it came to a number of conclusions. One, it found that the first commercial use of this portion of the parcel that it could find in the record was in 1993, well after the 1969 change in the zoning. It also found that the use being made by Mr. Hiedemann of the property was a non-accessory use. That is, it was not directed primarily to the residents and denizens in the hotel. It was directed to the community at large. And the Department of Planning also found that there were detrimental impacts on owners and occupants of the neighboring lands, primarily from the crowding that occurred along the seawalls and the noise that happened approximately 300 yards south of the hotel property itself. Instead, however, of simply issuing a cease and desist order, what the Department of Planning did is it crafted a set of conditions. And those conditions, by those conditions, it basically allowed the non-accessory new non-conforming use to continue, provided that these conditions were met. And these conditions were that there could be 12 students, 3 instructors, 3 times a day, 7 days a week, and that the Heidemann operation would be required to maintain, in some sense, the activities along the seawall. It was appealed, and we went to the circuit court. And the circuit court found that the land use ordinance does not have any provisions in it that allow the Department of Planning to make the kinds of exceptions that it did. And it found, therefore, that the Department of Planning acted in excess of its jurisdiction and that it was, therefore, inappropriate, and she overturned it. On the appeal to the intermediate...
Mr. Miller.
Yes, sir.
The court's order seemed somewhat contradictory because in its conclusions, it seems to indicate that the DPP exceeded its authority. And I take it that's because the DPP imposed conditions on the use. Is that correct?
I think what the court was saying there is that the DPP did not have the authority to allow a slide out of the provisions of the C4 portion of the land use, even with amendments, even with conditions. In other words, there's no provision for the DPP to make conditions to allow someone to evade the strictures in the land use ordinance.
And therefore it exceeded its jurisdiction.
And therefore it exceeded its
under
jurisdiction.
Under 91G, what is it?
Yes,
two?
Under HRS 91G, subsection either 1, 2, or 3, I forget.
So the order, though, of the court indicated that there was an abuse of discretion.
The court also...
How does that square with its conclusion?
The court did say both things in that order, and I am not sure precisely why the court felt that that was an abuse of discretion, perhaps because it felt that acting in excess of its jurisdiction is inherently an abuse of its discretion. It is not, as your question suggests, a finding that there was some finding of fact that the DPP came to that was abusive. So,
abuse of discretion in 91 is what, number 6 or 7 or something?
You're right, Your Honor.
And the court didn't enter any conclusions that there was a violation of that section.
I believe that that's the case.
All right.
Okay. To carry on, in the Intermediate Court of Appeal briefing, the respondents herein suggested that the Department of Planning has an inherent authority. It has some inherent power to craft these kinds of conditions. And in that portion of the briefing, what they did is they cited the court to other Hawaii Supreme Court cases where the legislature has established a legislative rubric, for example, in a labor case, and then has an agency go about taking care of that legislative rubric. Those cases, though, are different from zoning cases. And the reason is, as citing the Colony Surf case, the language in the Colony Surf case is quite clear. Zoning laws and ordinances are strictly construed as they are in derogation of the common law, and their provisions may not be extended by implication. What's happened in this case is that the provisions of the land use ordinance have been extended by implication, by some implied power that the DPP found that it has. A citation to a legislative stricture on employer-employee relations or on investor-bank relations, those are different kinds of legislative schemes. Those are schemes that are set up to benefit a certain class of beneficiaries, and they are supposed to be liberally construed. Those kinds of statutes are intended to be liberally construed, and the courts frequently find that they are liberally construed. A zoning schema is different. A zoning schema implicates real property rights. There are potential problems with constitutional rights of taking. It's quite easy if there are implied zoning regulations that are enforced, an implied zoning regime is enforced, that the city will be embroiled in condemnation cases and takings cases. There's another problem with zoning, with a zoning regime, and why it should be strictly enforced. In essence, a zoning regime is an understanding between property owners in a particular area. Each property owner, each parcel owner, is going to give up some of his rights. He gives up use rights. He gives up development rights. What he gets in return is the understanding that all of his neighbors are similarly giving up those use rights and those development rights. When those expectations are defeated, when the zoning regime makes it too easy for people to get variances, there is no equivalency of treatment of the folks that are in the zoning regime. So you'll frequently find that legislative bodies that set up zoning ordinances make it very difficult for there to be variances because they understand that the entire regime itself is subject to falling apart if it's too easy to get them. It's quite clear that that there are immense pressures that are put on bureaucrats and put on politicians from people that want to evade the strictures of the zoning regime. And it's an attempt to forestall those kinds of difficulties that makes the legislature, in fact, come up with a land use ordinance that the city of Honolulu has, where it makes it very clear that it is going to be very difficult to change your land use from a permitted use to a non-permitted use. Yes, sir.
Yes, Your Honor. What's the evidence as to the use before Mr. Hedman started the surf school in 2004?
Your Honor, the surf school actually started in 2002. That 100...
It was a surf school at that time in 2002?
Yes. Yes.
Not just a rental equipment?
No. There was, from 1993, the record reflects, that in 1993 there was a kayak / snorkel rental place that was in that property. There is, however, no evidence that there was a surf school during that time period, and there is no evidence that that use from 1993 to 1992 was anything but an accessory use. The use after 2002 is a non-accessory use, and it is the first evidence that we have of a surf school.
The 1993 evidence indicates that that shop also had surf boards or surfing equipment to rent.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that the DPP opinion did say that surfboards were available to be rented there. I don't think the DPP opinion says that there was a surf school operation there.
But did the DPP finding or decision indicate that this was an accessory use or that it could not determine whether it was an accessory use or not?
My recollection of the DPP opinion is they said they were not able to come to a conclusion one way or the other on that.
Does it make any difference if it was an accessory use or not?
No, Your Honor, I don't think that it does because the either an accessory use or a non-accessory use was not permitted in 1993 under the existing zoning. So whatever it was at that point in time, it was in excess of the existing zoning, and it was a change in the permitted use and shouldn't have been allowed. If I could very quickly turn to the second point that I believe is raised by the Colony Surf case. That has to do with the failure to apply the C1 portion of the land use ordinance that we're talking about here. That's 21-4.110C, and it is the first subsection of that. That's the subsection that, in effect, says that the owner of a parcel that has an existing use when a zoning regime is put in place, when he already has his use in place, is grandfathered in. He's allowed to continue that usage, but the C1 provision says the non-conforming use shall not be expanded in any manner. So the language of the statute is quite broad. It says, nor shall the non-conforming use be expanded in any manner. Now, what the Department of Planning did and what the ICA confirmed is that the Department of Planning had a choice to apply either the C1 portion of the land use ordinance or the C4 portion of the land use ordinance. And in Colony Surf, this court was presented with a very similar situation. It's the same land use ordinance, the 110C ordinance, But it was dealing with provisions 2, 3, and 5. And in that Colony Surf case, there is an extended discussion where this court points out that when there are overlapping provisions, you are not allowed to pick and choose among the overlapping provisions to choose to enforce provision 1 and ignore provision 2. You must attempt to give effect to all portions of the statute. That's a very important provision. That's a very important point because here, both the DPP and the ICA said that since the DPP elected to review this under the C4 provision, it need not trouble itself with the C1 prohibition rejecting the expansion of any nonconforming use. Now, in spite of that, the DPP did in fact go through and it did do an analysis to some degree of the change in use, of the alleged expansion in use. And they measured it in according to their internal document, the 88INT-6 document that provides for measurements along 6 different vectors. A point that we made was that those 6 vectors are not sufficient. The statute says nor shall there be an expansion in any manner. It doesn't confine itself to 6 vectors. It talks about as an expansion in any manner. And the blunt truth here is that in 1969, there was a 124-unit hotel on that parcel, and that in 2004, there was a 124-unit hotel on that parcel and a commercial non-accessory surf school. The DPP's conclusion that there was no expansion between those two time periods is, we submit, clearly erroneous. It's simply not possible to square that language with the conclusion that the DPP came to.
Well, how do you reconcile 4 then? Because the statute does, or the ordinance does provide that any nonconforming use may be changed to another nonconforming use, i.e. from the kayak shop to the surf shop. So that was allowed under this ordinance.
I understand your point, Your Honor, but I think that what is required is that the DPP has to give effect to both portions of the statute.
How is it supposed to give effect, and how would it reconcile these provisions?
I don't think that there's a need for a reconciliation, Your Honor. I think that you simply apply 2 tests. You look at the change that has been implemented, and you say, in the first instance, can we permit the change because under C4 there has been or there has not been a harm to the existing property owners? That's test number 1. And test number 2 is, if you do that change, does it result in an expansion of the usage of the parcel? So you do both tests, and you come to whichever conclusion you come to. And if the answer is yes, there is harm, then you don't have to go further. Or alternatively, if you find yes, there has been an expansion, you don't have to go further. Both tests apply.
Conditions imposed by DPP take care of any expansion?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that even with the conditions imposed by the DPP, you still, in 2004, end up with a 124-unit hotel and a non-accessory surf school operation, even though it is now limited to 12 students 3 times a day. That is an expansion. That does not appear to be allowed by the terms of the language of the statute, of the ordinance.
Although a change is allowed.
I'm sorry?
Although a change is allowed.
Yes, arguably a change could be allowed.
No, not arguably. It says a change may be changed. Any nonconforming use may be changed to another nonconforming use.
Yes.
So it doesn't say possibly or maybe.
Yes, but if you have a change and it is an expansion, we submit that C1 precludes that interpretation. If you have a change and an expansion, then you can't do it. If you have a change and it is not an expansion, if you change your use from operating a 50-unit restaurant and you change it to operating a 25-unit sandwich shop, then what you've done is you have changed from restaurant to sandwich shop, say. But
did
you
the
have.
DPP, excuse me. Did the DPP believe that by imposing these conditions, it took care of any expansion?
Well, I don't know what the DPP believed, Your Honor. I'll just leave it at that. I'm not sure what the DPP believed. Myself, I suspect that, as frequently is the case, they are under pressure to help landowners out, and they agreed to do that. One last point, since I see that my light is on here. Where there is an expansion, this court has previously held that a variance is required. That's McPherson v. Zoning Board of Appeals, 67 Hawaii 603 in 1985. If there are no further questions, I'd like to yes, Your Honor.
The non-conforming use prior to Mr. Hedman's operations was a valid non-conforming use?
I think the answer to that, Your Honor, is no. I think that in order for the non-conforming use to be valid, it had to have been in existence in 1969. There is no evidence in the record that the use of the shop starting in 1993 was in place in 1969. Quite frankly, Your Honor, I doubt that very much, because the earlier accessory, non-accessory distinction that was made under the earlier statutes also had a requirement that there be no access to the outside of the hotel. In other words, accessory uses are permitted for a hotel, but they all had to be interior access. This particular portion of the parcel has an exterior access, so I doubt that it would have been allowed even under the 1969 rubric.
So under the change provision,
yes,
it needs to be changed from a valid non-conforming use to another valid non-conforming use. If it's an invalid non-conforming use, it can't be a change as such. Is that right?
Actually, the C4 exception says that you can change from an existing non-conforming use, and you
That's
can change
valid,
it.
Though, doesn't it?
Well, no, you can change it to basically any non-conforming use. There is no restriction in that statute that I see. Well, no, of the same nature. It has to be of the same nature and character or something like that.
But yeah. Does that mean that it has to be a valid non-conforming use which is changed? Can you have an invalid non-conforming use and you change it and then it becomes valid?
I don't
it's
think so,
not
Your
of
Honor.
The same nature.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I don't think so. And anything further, Your Honors? Okay. With that, I'll turn this over to Mr. Ewan. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is William Ewan. I'm appearing on behalf of Hans Hedeman Surf. Mr. Don Kitaoka, the Deputy Corporation for the Council for the City, will take approximately 5 minutes of the time that's allotted to our side. Basically, we believe that the Director of Planning properly issued a declaratory ruling upholding a change in nonconforming use from hotel to office in this case. In reaching this conclusion, the director properly determined the level of activity in terms of the number and size of students beyond which the change in nonconforming use would have no adverse impact on the surrounding community. Contrary to the assertions of Save Diamond Head, a variance is not an applicable procedure.
Let me ask you. The prior non-conforming use before Mr. Hedman took over, what was that? You said hotel.
The prior non-conforming use is a hotel. Mr. Hedeman rented a space on the first floor of the hotel.
Was its operation at the time he did that?
The operation at the time he took over that space, it was previously occupied by a tenant who leased or rented ocean sports equipment, kayaks, surfboards, snorkels.
And so you, was there a determination that that was an accessory use to the hotel? You call it a hotel use to a office.
I don't believe there was any formal determination as to whether that use was an accessory use or another nonconforming use. That's my opinion. I don't believe there's any statement in the record or that the Department of Planning made any finding in that regard.
So the term hotel, from a hotel use, that's not a determination of its use, that there was a determination that
it was
accessory to the hotel.
I believe the director's finding was that the prior nonconforming use was hotel without a specific finding as to whether that use of that store space was an accessory use or just part of the general hotel nonconforming use of the premises.
Okay, well, what's the evidence as to the business's customers, or who was it servicing? Doesn't that make a difference in terms of whether it's an accessory or non-accessory use?
I believe that if the customer base is primarily hotel guests, it would generally be considered an accessory use.
What was the evidence?
I don't believe there was any evidence taken as to the prior owner's or prior occupant of that space's use, since I don't believe the department made any attempt to contact that prior owner at all, or prior tenant.
So would it be fair to say then the conclusion of it being a hotel, from hotel use to an office, that the reference to hotel is mere speculation? Because it's referring to an accessory use, right?
Well, I guess a hotel on the beach and a facility to rent ocean sports equipment to the guests of a hotel on the beach.
You're speculating.
I am speculating.
There's no evidence.
There is no evidence. No evidence was taken on that point. Yes.
How do you square 1 and 4 in the Land Use Ordinance 21.4.110? The argument Mr. Miller made, that one says you can't expand a nonconforming use, and 4 saying that a nonconforming use may be changed to another nonconforming use.
I believe the director concluded that there was no expansion of the nonconforming use, in the sense that the structure was not expanded, the hours of operation of the structure were not expanded. The director did consider, though, the effects of the use of the Mr. Hedeman's use of the premises had secondary effects on neighbors, that the director desired to impose limitations on in order to describe the level beyond which the director believed that there would be no adverse effects on the surrounding community. But the director did look at the various criteria set forth in the 1988 director's interpretive guidelines as to factors to be considered in determining whether a nonconforming use had or had not been expanded.
Was this a more restricted use of the premises?
I don't believe the director concluded that it was or was not a more restrictive use. But the director did, regardless of whether it was more restrictive, the director did look at the relations of the use to the surrounding property. That's a factor in C4.
If there is a change Does it have to be a change from a legal non-conforming use?
I'm not sure what you mean by the term legal non-conforming use.
Well, whatever the non-conforming use was prior to the director's actions. He calls it a change. He says, now I'm changing from hotel to office.
I don't believe that there's
a... to be initially a legal...
Well, in order to be a valid non-conforming use, the non-conforming use must predate the change in the zoning ordinance that rendered the prior use non-conforming.
What is your understanding then? Was it a valid...
The hotel use was a valid non-conforming use.
No, the operation of Surf Shop 7, okay. You said there's no evidence, as far as you know, as to whether it was an accessory use. In other words, was it serving the hotel guests and or the owners? So the question as to whether it was valid or invalid, it seems to be up in the air.
The director did not make a finding on whether that accessory use was valid or not valid. I guess the director...
Your answer, though, is that if there is a change, you're not certain if it has to be a change from a valid non-conforming use?
I believe the overall use of the property is a hotel use.
I understand your position on that, but I'm talking about the specific shop.
The specific shop. My speculation is that it was an accessory use, but the director did not.
Doesn't that have to be determined if you call it a hotel use? That you're changing it from a hotel use to another.
Well, you could change the C4 permits you to change the hotel use to, say, a business use. The C4 does not restrict the C4 restricts changes in non-conforming use to...
I guess what I'm getting at is when you say, you know, it changes and it has to be of the same... or
same general nature.
Right.
I believe it would be inappropriate, say, to change that use of that space to a farm, an agricultural use or an industrial use. But I believe the director concluded that the change from hotel use to retail store space to office use was a permitted change of the same general nature and impact.
And the hotel use that he refers to is an assumption on his part.
No, I believe the record, there's evidence in the record to support that the overall use of the property was a hotel use.
No, but we're talking about
the space.
The specific space as to whether or not it was
There's evidence that it was a valid. It was used for that purpose as far back as 1993.
The hotel doesn't make it a hotel use, right?
If that use services the guests of the hotel, then
that's speculation.
That is speculation. There's no finding on that. There's evidence that it was used as a shop. There's no finding that it was. The customers were primarily hotel guests. Okay. Turning back to my argument, basically we believe the intermediate court properly applied the clearly erroneous standard of review for findings of fact, as well as for mixed questions of law. The intermediate court properly gave deference to the agency's expertise in this case and properly concluded that the director's imposition of limitations on the change in nonconforming use was reasonably based on the evidence before the director, and that the director did not abuse his discretion in setting those limits and permitting the change in nonconforming use.
What were the purposes of the conditions, Mr. Yuan?
The purpose of the limitations were basically to ameliorate any adverse effects on the surrounding community. The director found that a certain degree of noise and activity could cause disturbance to the surrounding area, but also observed when the staff visited the site that surf lessons could be conducted with no adverse effects on the surrounding community. So the director...
Was that for the purpose of Section 1, which refers to expansion of use, or was it for the purpose of addressing Section 4, which talks about more restricted use?
The director's purpose was directed to Section 4, which basically says that a change in nonconforming use or a change to a more restricted use may be made only if the relation of the use to the surrounding property is such that adverse effects on occupants and neighboring properties will not be greater than if the original nonconforming use continued.
Do 1 and 4 operate exclusively? I mean, does 1 operate in one situation that 4 doesn't operate in?
I believe that they have to be construed together, although trying to construe them together often does require that one be given precedence over the other. In this case, the director concluded that there was no expansion of the nonconforming use in terms of the structure or the hours of operation, and therefore the nonconforming use did not violate either 1 or 4.
We're talking about a principal use, is that right?
The principal use of the property is hotel.
But it changed to office?
Of that space changed to office, yes.
Is that a principal use?
It could be considered a principal use.
Determine a principal use.
I guess the director...
The LUO, is there a way to look to see if it's itemized, right?
Principal uses are itemized. This office would be a general business use under the LUO.
It would be a what?
A general business use under the LUO, I believe.
And the office is determined by DPP as because it's a gathering place for the customers.
The DPP construed that the activity of registering customers, furnishing them with surfboards, and processing them before the...
For recreational use purposes.
Well, for recreational use, yes.
Okay, now when you look at the principal use of the hotel, I mean, is it listed in what we're talking about, a chart that you look at with the listed...
I believe a hotel is a principal use.
Do you find that there is reference or listed of recreational purposes or activities?
As a principal use?
Is that listed?
I'm not sure.
I don't think it is.
Well, the LUO does permit or list open space recreation as a a use under in other sections of the LUO. For instance, a golf course is categorized under other sections of the LUO as a recreational use, but recreation is permitted in certain zoning districts.
For hotel guests and that type of thing.
Well, one would presume that a beachfront hotel, the attraction of a beachfront hotel, is to partake in ocean recreation, or one of the attractions.
Mr. Yuen, where does the director get the power to impose conditions?
I believe the director's power to impose conditions or limitations is basically taken from the section 6-1503 of the city charter, which generally gives the director powers to implement and enforce, or let's see, be charged 6-1503J, the director shall be charged with administration and enforcement of the zoning, subdivision, etc., ordinances and rules and regulations adopted under those ordinances, and any regulatory laws and ordinances which may be adopted to supplement or replace those ordinances. The rules of the department also authorize the director to issue declaratory rulings, which is how this case arose.
Does the statute 46.4, where it says the powers granted herein shall be liberally construed in favor of the county exercising them, does that have any relationship here, or is that just a general statement?
I believe that the directors would have any mandate or any statutes creating various administrative positions in the government would have to be liberally construed in order to allow someone like the director of planning to carry out all of his functions. I don't believe that many of his day-to-day responsibilities are clearly defined in the statute, since he does have to enforce a wide-ranging number of statutes and ordinances.
Mr. Yuen, did you just recently state that the director made a finding that this was a non-conforming hotel use? Did you just say that?
Yes, I believe it.
And what number did the... where was that finding by the director? And that it was a more restricted or of the same nature, general impact of previous non-conforming?
Oh, let's see. Bear with me for a second. And page 5 of the director's ruling is June 30th, 2004, ruling under paragraph 3, non-conformities. The director concluded that the hotel use was established in 1950 as a permitted use in the hotel apartment district, and with the change in zoning became a non-conforming use.
The surf school?
No, the hotel. You asked about the hotel.
Okay, you said the hotel was a non-conforming use.
Yes.
Okay.
And the surf school, in the director's analysis on pages 12 and 13 of the director's decision, the director describes the activities of the surf school, and on page 13 concludes that the use should be considered an office. And goes on to conclude that it's an expansion of the nonconformity. Or or a change in the nonconformity. On page 14, the director discusses the various changes in the zoning ordinance. And the director concludes that any ground floor commercial uses on the site considered principal uses, including the surf school, are permissible so long as their impact on the surrounding properties is no greater than that of the hotel use. On page 14 of the director's
That doesn't
decision.
Say it's a non-conforming. It just says no greater than.
It says that any ground floor commercial use would be considered a principal use, which would be a permitted non-conforming use. If there are no other questions, I'm going to defer to Mr. Kitaoka.
May it please the Court, Don Kitaoka, Deputy Corporation Counsel, on behalf of the Director of Planning and Permitting. I'm here to make just a few points in my 5 minutes. First that...
Mr. Kitaoka, sorry.
Yes.
Did the director find that this surf school had the general or... the same kind of general impact as the previous use?
It found that the surf school didn't have any impacts that were more egregious than the impacts that would have been accompanied to an accessory use of a hotel.
If the conditions were applied?
Well, I don't like to call them conditions because the point that I would try to make is
what
that...
What did the DPP call them?
What did the DPP call them?
Yes.
I believe that they were characterized as the permissible limits of use. And so if I may, the whole premise of the so-called conditions was just to define the outer limits of the use, not to say that it's issuing a permit for the use, but in fact it's defining what kind of use there is permissible as a change in use under the C4 section.
So your position is this doesn't have a greater impact than the prior use.
It was the director's determination that so long as the surf school's activities were limited in scope, that those activities won't have any greater effect than a hotel accessory use.
How far can the director go in imposing conditions?
Well, this is...
What are the limits on his imposing, limitations?
In order to effectively administer the zoning laws, the director needs to have the discretion to make determinations in interpreting the law as to the permissible limits of permissible uses. So in this case, it wasn't so much imposing conditions. It was more like, if this use is to be an acceptable or permissible change in use, it has to be limited in scope. So 12 students would be limited in scope, and it would have that kind of effect on the neighboring properties. If you had 25 students, then the effects would be a lot greater.
Where do limitations and variance meet? What's the end of limitations, and what's the beginning of variance?
Variance would be, variance procedure wouldn't be applicable to this particular case, because the variance procedure would be that if there is a zone and there was not a nonconformity, then any other uses outside of that zone permitted uses would have to get a variance. This is a case where...
So you're saying a variance doesn't apply where there's a request for a change in nonconformance?
That's exactly right, because when there's... a change in a non-conforming use, the non-conforming use has already been established. And so it's just like if, in fact, the use is established, it's grandfathered in, and there's a permissible change in use. Perhaps...
So then it has to be a valid non-conforming use.
Yes. I would say it would have to be a valid non-conforming use. And in this case, the record is replete with evidence that the ground floor level of the new Ohtani Hotel was commercial use. It had various shops along a strip. If you've ever been out there, if you go through the ground floor, there's various commercial uses. Those commercial uses were accompanying the hotel from its inception until today.
Does it have to be an accessory use?
Does it have to be accessory use? It doesn't have to be, but in this case, in order for the commercial uses to be valid, it needed to be accessory at the time that it was created, because those were the only kinds of commercial uses that were accepted.
Yeah, what was the evidence? We understand there was no evidence.
Well, I'm the only one here sitting that I was never involved in the case below, but as far as the state of the record as I know it, it was established and it was never challenged that the prior commercial uses that were along the ground floor of the new Ohtani Hotel were in fact established. And if they were established, then they were valid accessory non-conforming uses.
No permits are issued for non-conforming uses, is that correct?
That's correct.
So any use can be made, and so long as no one challenges, it's okay.
If the use was established when the law changed, then those uses were grandfathered in.
But then there can be changes in that use, and as long as no one challenges it, then that whatever new use is can continue.
There can be changes in use, and in this particular case, the appellants were asking the director, is this a permissible change in non-conforming use? And the director concluded yes.
Yes. So when you refer to valid non-conforming use, that term isn't any place in the statutes, ordinances, or rules, is it?
Well, I only use the word valid because Chief Justice Moon used it. But
a problem with that. But so what is a valid non-conforming use? A non-conforming use that hasn't been challenged?
A valid non-conforming use is one that has been established prior to the change of the law.
Established by what?
Established by use. If in fact...
So you can use a space for any reason as long as no one challenges it, then it's a valid non-conforming use?
Well, the non-conforming use itself is the particular use that was established at the time of the law change. Now, that use can change with time. And perhaps an example...
But a change can take place without any permitting process or any formal process.
That's correct. But if there is a complaint about that use, the DPP will determine whether that change in use was a valid one.
Using whatever use was in place at that time.
That's
correct. As a sort of a benchmark or...
What would happen is that if there's a complaint about a change in use, DPP would send out its inspectors to see, well, what is the use now? And is that a change from the established non-conforming use that was previously there?
No matter what the prior established valid use was before that?
It does matter, because the DPP will in fact determine whether the impacts from the new changed use are more or less than the established use. So if in fact they're more, then the DPP will determine that that's not a valid change in use. An example would be if there is a non-conforming, say, a dress shop, and then the owner starts doing alterations, and then the alterations become the business, and then the dress shop discontinues and it's only alterations. Well, that has been a continuous use, but the original use was the dress shop.
Can you go from a dress shop to a surf shop?
You can go from a dress shop to a surf shop. In this case, from a hotel accessory to a surf shop or an office.
We don't know whether it's an accessory or not, do we?
Do we know whether... Okay. Can you go from a dress shop to a surf shop? Yes.
Okay.
You can. It's a commercial use, except that the impacts from the surf shop cannot be more than was established when it was a dress shop.
Which applied here, one or four?
Four.
Why not one?
Because one is an analysis of whether, in fact, if there is an established non-conforming use, whether that use has been expanded. For instance, if you had a restaurant that was open from 8 to 6.
A valid non-conforming use would just be a use that hasn't been challenged.
A valid one would be that if it were challenged, it was found that that use was established at the time of the law change.
So you determined that
it's been unchallenged, it's good, until such time as DBP assesses it and determines whether, in fact, that use was established or whether it was a valid change in use. So we're dealing with number four, because number one deals with if you had a restaurant that went from 8 to 4 and now you want it to go to midnight or 24 hours, that's an expansion of a non-conforming use. If you increased the floor space of your non-conforming use, that's an expansion under number one.
One talks about structure, use, and hours of operation.
Yes.
So use would be something different from structure and hours of operation, wouldn't it?
Well, use can be influenced by, the intensity of the use can be influenced by the structure and the hours of operation. For instance, if you had limited hours and then now you have expansive hours, the intensity of the use is increased. It, in fact, can be viewed as an expansion of the use. So number one, it deals with if you have a valid non-conforming use established, has that use been expanded now under number one? Then you do that analysis of whether, in fact, the impacts are that that use has been expanded. And in fact, the expansion of the use is prohibited.
Would that involve a change?
I understand, but there's two different concepts here. One is an expansion of an existing non-conforming use, and one is a change from one use to another. So if the dress shop went into an alteration business, that's clearly a change in use from a retail of dresses to alterations of dresses as a service. Now the court can see that that's a change. But does that change have any greater impact on the public, or should that dress shop owner be allowed to do that, or should she be cut off?
So if you go from a dress shop to including bridal gowns, then that would be an expansion under one.
If, in fact,
or
bridal gowns was such that your client base was increased ninefold, say, then that may be an expansion, but that's to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis, because any reasonable person would assume that a dress shop could include bridal gowns. But if, in fact, bridal gowns and then you start going into shoes and work clothes and everything else, if the thing goes expanded, then you look under Section 1. And if, in fact, it turned into an alteration shop, but then you hired 25 tailors, then it's bigger. And so that the director needs to be given the discretion to say, okay, you can change from a dress shop to an alteration shop, so long as your alteration shop doesn't have any greater impacts than the dress shop. You cannot hire 25 lawyers now or 19 different seamstresses in your alteration shop to expand that use. So then the director would say, in response to a request for declaratory relief, these are what I believe to be the perceivable limits of how many tailors you can have in there. So you don't have more than three, please. Or don't have more than this amount of service available to the public. I mean, a number of examples can be brought up. For instance,
Does a surf shop a more restricted use?
Is it a more restricted use? It's either a more restrictive use or no greater than the use that would have been allowed under a hotel accessory use. And that's why
it's of the same nature and general impact as the kayak shop?
It was an office that was used to pretty much disperse students of surfing.
So not the same general impact?
Not the same impact, but the same degree or intensity of impact that would have been allowed. And that's why when I'm saying you don't hire 25 tailors, well, in this particular instance, the director needs the discretion to say that use is okay as a permissible change, but don't go overboard by having more than 12 students. Don't go overboard by having hours of operation beyond midnight or whatever it is.
How can it be a more restricted use if it's of the same general nature and impact?
It can be a more restrictive use because it can be a more restrictive intensity in use. For instance, if in fact the surf shop had less customers that would have come into an accessory hotel use, then the director should be able to say, the surf shop use is okay, but if you got 25 students, that's not okay. When the director went out there with the inspector and saw four students out there, he said, well, this use is okay. Now, if he saw 25, he might have had a different analysis. It's saying 25 is no good. If you had had four, or if you had had 12, then that would have been okay. The director needs to have that kind of discretion in enforcing and applying the zoning laws. Otherwise, there would be only cut and dry. The dress shop wouldn't be able to turn into an alteration shop.
Mr. Kadoka, how often what kind of fact finding do they have to make? Would there reports that at other times there were 25 students or more, and the time the director went out there happened to be four with two instructors?
The inspector went out there and there happened to be four. Okay. But from the record, there were complaints of a lot. And there were complaints of noise and people on the reefs and crowding and all of that. So the director had in his purview all of the evidence that he deemed necessary, or that the department deemed necessary, to make an assessment of how many is too much. So at the time that the inspector went out there, this use is perfectly fine. It has no greater impact than an accessory hotel use.
Oh, that was based on going out once?
Director,
what happened to be there that day?
Happened to be there that day. There was no witnessing on any other day in the record of it being abusive or too extensive. But he had evidence that there were complaints that it was. So the director is making a determination. Okay, this change in use is okay. But I know that you can't go too far with this use. And so I, as director, and making a determination with what I believe would be permissible. And I'm just giving you guidance because you asked, is this permissible? I'm giving you guidance. If there were more than 12, then I probably find that it exceeds a permissible use. But as a rose is a use is not always a use because there are different degrees of use.
Mr. Kiroga, in regards to the complaints, what is the evidence? What does it show in terms of when a complaint or complaints were made? How many students were there? What was there a determination of that?
I believe that there was a petition that was within the purview of the director, where 700 or so people signed the petition. It was circulated among the community. There were some factual allegations in that petition. I believe that when in fact people were submitting complaints, they were saying there were X number or in excess of X number of people out there that was were causing disturbances. So there was evidence in the record, but as I say, I'm the only one here that wasn't down below. So,
what about complaints made prior to Hedman taking over?
I don't think there were any. There's anything in the record to show that there were complaints.
So that goes to the whether it's the same nature or general impact.
Right. So in fact, if they find that 12 or less students or 15 total with three instructors is the level that is tolerable, they're saying if you go over that, then that's the problem with the complaints, and that's the problem with defining our permissible limits of activities that need to be controlled. But what the circuit court, and perhaps some analysis of this case, why it's difficult, is because they are called conditions. And what I'm saying is that they're really not conditions. They're just definitions or guidance as to what the director deemed permissible. Over 12, he would probably find impermissible. Under, it's okay. But it's not a complete ban of the use, because the use inherently, just by its nature, does not have greater impacts than a hotel accessory use. The use has greater impacts only if the use is to the intensity.
Well, it's different from accessory use, right? Because people are bussed in.
That's right. And so accessory use...
Most of the people who use the school are bussed in from other...
That's right. And so it was a change in use. So the analysis was, well, now that it's a principal office use, does that use have greater impacts than a hotel accessory commercial use? And the conclusion was, if it's small, it's okay. If it's big, it's not. And that's why the director needs to be given that discretion, and that discretion needs to be given deference, because he and the department have the expertise to determine whether that level is permissible or not. They, in fact, are the guardians of the zoning laws. We as lawyers are guardians of the law. The DPP is guardians of the zoning law.
Mr. Kittle, can you use the term, this is an accessory commercial use?
Yes.
What is the evidence as to the, when you say accessory commercial use, the term accessory has certain meaning to it,
yes,
which indicates normally catering
primarily
to and servicing hotel guests.
Primarily.
Yeah.
But that doesn't
primarily
mean it's okay, not,
so
it's
what,
only limited to hotel
so
guests.
What was the determination in terms of the evidence in terms of accessory?
I believe, and it's, I'm not...
You were there.
Yeah, I wasn't there. Okay. I believe that the use of the commercial spaces was a slam dunk established their uses from the inception of the hotel.
I mean, there's been a statement here that there's no evidence to that effect.
Well, there's evidence to the effect that there was at least a use of sports rental equipment from 1993.
That was a commercial use and it was non-accessory?
It depends. Okay.
And we don't know then. Is that right? Or you don't know at least.
I don't know.
And the statement from the other counsel indicated
but
there is no evidence.
If there is evidence that a use was there since 1993 and it went unchallenged, and that there's evidence that commercial uses were established when the hotel was established, and there's evidence that, in fact, when the LUO was enacted in 1992, that there were commercial uses over there, it's a matter of whether all of those uses were grandfathered in. So it doesn't have to be one in which there has to be a beyond a reasonable doubt satisfaction that a use was established in 1982 as accessory or not, because at that point the only use that was in fact allowable in 1982 was accessory. Okay, so the fact that they went on forever, all of these commercial establishments on the ground floor went on forever since the hotel was built, there can be a reasonable finding, in fact, that the prior uses were grandfathered in and that there were no break, because there's no establishment that there was a break in service, so to speak.
Okay.
So
under all of the different ordinances or the amendments to the ordinances throughout the years, from first hotel and then apartments and then right now, the hotel itself is a non-conforming use, right?
It's a non-conforming use, yes.
Yeah. Has there ever been allowed non-accessory commercial business use there? For
only
apartments,
if there was a prior change in use under Section 4. Only if there was a prior permissible change in use. But if, in fact, a use was established and there was no change in use, that use had to be accessory.
Since 1992?
Yes.
Has the ordinances, the zoning laws, allowed non-accessory commercial business use?
Since 82? Okay, since 1982, when the LUO went into effect, the LUO recognizes non-conforming uses. what had to be established in 1982 was that the use that was being made of at the time should have been accessory to the hotel, because that was the only permissible use prior to 1982.
It was only accessory commercial use that was permitted.
Right, in under prior law. And so by the fact that when you go there and you observe that all of the commercial spaces on the ground floor of this hotel are continuing on, there can be a reasonable conclusion, and it was not challenged, Your Honor, it was never challenged on the record, that those uses were established and in fact were valid non-conforming uses.
Isn't the surf shop a non-accessory commercial use?
That's correct. It's a principal
office
use.
Is there any law now which permits non-accessory commercial uses?
If you start them now? No.
Zero law. Okay. So your whole premise is based on the fact that this is a continuing non-conforming use.
Once you get into the established non-conforming use, then you get into the establishment of whether a change, in fact, was permissible or whether there be no expansion. So the fact that it was established is never challenged on the record. The fact that the prior uses were established, non-conforming uses, is never challenged on the record.
When you look at Section 4, when the director applies the test of general and similar nature or more restricted use to the facts, his determinations are subject to a clearly erroneous standard. Is that right?
That's correct. Abuse of discretion. No. Was there discretion exercised?
Abuse of discretion is not the same as clearly erroneous.
Well, clearly erroneous would be to the factual, right? Abuse of discretion would
be to his... If it's a mixed question, when the director applies the test to the facts, if it's a mixed question of law and fact, then the standard is clearly erroneous,
yes.
Is it not? So the question of abuse of discretion only comes in when the director imposes these conditions or limitations. Is that correct?
If you view it as a condition and if you...
Well, is it a clearly erroneous standard with respect to these limitations? Or is it an abuse of discretion standard?
It's an abuse of discretion standard for any legal determination as he made. So if this court views the placing of permissible limits, it was a declaration by the director.
There is no express provision for the director imposing limitations or conditions for non-conforming uses, is there?
Well, there's a general...
Is there any express...
No.
Okay.
There's no...
So if there's no express standard or test in the ordinances or statutes, then if he does these things, it must be pursuant to his discretion.
Right. He's exercising his discretion.
And that discretion must be covered by statute or ordinance.
That discretion is, in fact, his administration and enforcement of the zoning laws. Because in my dress shop example, if we take the plaintiff's appellant's point of view, it would never, no change would be allowable. That poor shop owner who sold dresses could not have an alteration business in its place, and that would be cut off. A music store owner could not do repair of musical instruments if that became his business. Now, if in fact the music shop owner decided to give music lessons, that's another story, because in fact that might have greater impacts. So if you're saying that, okay, you can have musical instruction, but please don't do it at night. So if the director says you can have musical instruction as your business, but please don't do it at night, that's the same limitation that is being put on the surf shop. Please don't have over 12. So if we don't give the director that kind of discretion, there will just be black and whites. The music store owner could never give lessons in the music shop. The dress shop owner could never change it to an alteration shop. There has to be discretion, and this court should only reverse that exercise of that discretion if it finds an abuse or clearly erroneous factual basis for that exercise. There has to be that exercise of discretion in order for there to be an effective administration and enforcement of the zoning laws.
Thank you, Mr. Kiroka.
I have one question, Mr. Kiroka.
Longer than 5 minutes.
Yeah. Is there some kind of a social policy in the LUO that discourages perpetuation of non-conforming uses?
Yes.
And what is that policy?
That policy, how would you state it? Is that upon cessation, if you cease a non-conforming use, you cannot bring it back. And then in that manner, when those uses continue through time to be discontinued, the property becomes conforming after a while. And then all uses become conforming. And there is a general policy of being strictly enforcing that if, in fact, you cease the use for a year, you don't get to bring it back, because now we're closer to conformity. But if, in fact, you have an established non-conforming use, the LUO also makes a policy decision to allow changes in those uses because the non-conformity has already been established.
And if I understand you correctly, you're saying that the non-conformity under the facts of this case, where people are being bussed in from other hotels and that, is the same as if they're just operating a surfboard rental shop in the hotel.
Is that the same? Well, the rental of the sporting equipment is not limited to hotel guests alone. I mean, it may have primarily served hotel guests, but people could come in from outside. So the assessment or the analysis of the change in use would be, well, is the change in use now more intense than what was allowed by the rental shop? Is it more intense now that people are being bussed in? And the director made a determination, so long as it's about 12, it's not more intense than an accessory hotel use.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Miller, how many? 1 minute. Mr. Miller.
And I promise I'll be brief.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I think that there is at least a difference of opinion between myself and Mr. Kitaoka and Mr. Yun with respect to how the land use ordinance works. The section that we're talking about, 21-4.110C, provides at the outset that constraints are placed on nonconformities to facilitate eventual conformity with the provisions of this chapter. It goes on to say that the owner, occupant, or user shall bear the burden to show that a lot, a structure, or a use was legally established as it now exists. This bears on the question of what's the appropriate comparison. We're comparing Mr. Heidemann's surf shop, where he buses folks in, and are we comparing it to a kayak rental shop, or are we comparing it to the hotel use? The use that was, and I quote, legally established, the use that was legally established was the use that was being made of that piece of property in 1969. The only evidence in the record is that the only legal use of the property in 1969 was as a hotel room, not as an accessory kayak shop. So accordingly, the comparison that has to be thought about when we're making a determination as to whether there is whether this is of the same nature and general impact under subsection 4, the comparison is between a couple staying in the hotel room in 1969 and then masses of people being bussed in. I think if you look at the statute in its entirety, you will see that because the burden is on the proponent of the new use, they are the ones that are forced to come forward and show that the use that we're making now is, and I quote again, legally established. If you are trying to say that my surf school use is the same as a kayak use, you have to show that the kayak use was legally established. That wasn't done below, and quite frankly, it can't be done, because in 1993, even that accessory use was in excess of the zoning restrictions that were in place at the time. And as I pointed out before, there was absolutely no showing that in 1969 there was that kind of a use. I also want to make clear that it is my view of this court's holdings that where there is an expansion of a non-conforming use, that the expansion requires a variance procedure to go through, to be gone through, and that was the case that I had pointed out to you earlier. So the C1 provision that is in this land use ordinance that we're talking about precludes any expansion in use. If there is an expansion of use, that's when the variance procedures that are found within the revised city charter come into play. And the people of the city of Honolulu went to a fair amount of trouble to make it clear that variances are not to be lightly given and that they are matters of significant public concern. That's why there's a requirement that there's a public meeting there. One of the difficulties with giving the director implied authority to change how these codes get done is that it is not subject to review by the people that are most affected. After the fact, years after the fact, they learned that something has happened and the director says it's okay. Well, there's supposed to be public meetings about things like this when there are potentially very large adverse impacts to the community. So one of the reasons that I think the answer to Justice Acoba's question about should this be expansively interpreted, going back to another portion of the revised city charter that grants the DPP the right to execute and administer the land use ordinances, you can't say that because they have the right to administer the land use ordinances that they have the right to either add to them, amend them, or change them. And what's happened in this case is they have amended and changed the provisions of the land use ordinance. There is no provision in it for a new use which has caused a demonstrated harm to the community. There is no provision for a negotiation to occur between the director of the department and the parcel owner to come to some or another conclusion. Those are the kinds of things that the people should be involved in. That's why there should be public hearings on these things. And with that, I will...
I had one question.
Yes,
I want to prolong
this,
but what's your view of the difference between an established non-conforming use, a valid non-conforming use, and what you propose, a legal non-conforming use?
Well, Your Honor, I'm simply quoting from the land use ordinance. And the land use ordinance itself talks about a use legally established as it now exists. So my understanding of how these provisions work is that when a landowner has an existing use on his parcel and then the zoning regime changes, he is allowed to continue that existing use. If he changes it at some later point in time, then he must meet the burdens that are imposed in the land use ordinance. And the burdens are substantial because the goal of the land use ordinance is to facilitate eventual conformity with the provisions of this chapter. In other words, to make the areas homogeneous, to make them all conforming. This ordinance is not intended to make it easy for people to change their use. It is not intended to make it easy for them to expand their use. Those are when those things occur, it hurts other members in the community, and it vitiates, it takes away from the power of the entire zoning regime. There is a possibility, as change after change after change is made, that the folks in the community will simply determine that the land use ordinance is not working and they'll do away with it entirely. And that's one of the real problems with having land use ordinances that allow people to escape the strictures of the zoning regime too easily. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you to both counsel, and the court will take this matter under advisement.
even more